Climate change is affecting many aspects of our world, including accelerating the loss of habitat and species. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. There's an exhibit at the James Watrous Gallery. It's titled Uprooted: Plants in a Changing Climate. And you can see it through this weekend in Madison. It's a great, really a wonderful exhibit. In the studio with me today, Helen Klebisaddle, a Madison-based artist, best known for her large-scale, detailed watercolors. They're just beautiful. And they address environmental and sometimes women-centered subjects as well. Helen, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Larry.
And Evan Eifler is a PhD student in the Department of Botany at the University of Wisconsin. And Evan, great to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
They are both involved in the exhibit at the James Watrous Gallery, and it's part of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, which is really a very cool thing. So we'll talk with them about how they collaborated for the show, how climate change is affecting our plants and their habitat, and certainly inviting your questions as we move along today. What questions do you have about mixing science and art? I think it's a really cool thing. What would you like to know about climate change and plants? You can join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's talk some more first about the idea behind the show, the gallery show itself. Helen, do you want to do that?
Sure, I'll take that one. In 2016, every few years, the Wisconsin Academy of Science, Arts, and Letters and its James Watrous Gallery puts out an open call for artists to submit their work to be chosen to be in the exhibition there. And in 2006, the gallery director and curator of the gallery, Jody Kloss, noticed that there were a number of artists in the submissions that had seemed to be doing art about their environment and the plants in their environment. So they thought it might be a fun idea to bring together those of us who were doing that work to design a show around it, but also coordinate it with pairing each of us up in the exhibition with a scientist who is working on the subject matter in our area to help us deepen our information and to create a collaborative relationship between us. And I was lucky enough to have Evan as my collaborative partner.
And Evan, so that's how you got involved.
Yeah, we were approached by the people organizing this exhibition, and I jumped on it. I wanted to help in any way I can, just help these artists understand climate change and how plants are reacting.
So you reacted pretty well right from the start on this.
All right.
Well, give us an idea of what people will see when they go to the gallery.
Well, there are two Native American artists that are sharing some imagery of their baskets, the actual baskets that are made out of paper birch and black ash, which are two trees that are endangered. They're moving north with the climate. As it gets too warm, they may eventually be out of Wisconsin altogether. And so for that particular art form, they're endangered. For the rest of us, there are five painters who are working a variety of medium from watercolor to oils, and two of us, myself and Lynn Railsback, collaborate or focused our artwork on the central Wisconsin prairies and savannas, which is also a love of Evan. And then two of the artists focused on the northern forests. That's Beth Ann Moran Handitz and Cynthia Rinich Langlos. And then finally, Katie Musloff also focused on wetlands and plant life near the Mississippi River. So all five of us were paired with different people with backgrounds in botany.
Well, they're beautiful paintings, aren't they?
Yeah, they're incredible. They're so detailed. I don't understand how you use watercolor to convey such detail in the chaos of a prairie.
Watercolor drawing. It's like any botanic. Some of the artists are botanical artists that really consider themselves to almost be doing scientific illustration. In particular, I'd say Lynn's Railsback identified in that way. I don't identify in that way, but I happen to love plant life. And I sometimes teach nature journaling and teach it as a way to help people just look very carefully at plants to understand how they fit together and what they look like. So I kind of deployed that approach to the imagery in my paintings.
Well, and we have, I think, one of your paintings we posted on our in our program notes. Mm-hmm. And so as you're listening to these two artists, scientists talk, I tell you what, you can go to WPR.org/Larry, and you'll see one of the paintings that Helen did. It was absolutely, what was it called again?
Probably Prairie, a Disappearing Prairie.
Disappearing Prairie 1.
Yes. And there's a Prairie 2, so go see it.
You have three up there, do you not?
No, seven.
Seven up there.
Yeah, that are watercolors either on paper or canvas.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Go to WPR.org/Larry, and you can at least get an idea of some of the things that you're going to see. Why is it important to combine art and science, do you think?
That's a great question. I think for me personally, it's sort of tiresome to see all plants in art depicted as just sort of a general flower, just a basic mm-hmm. flower form. And it's really satisfying to see ones that are botanically accurate, and not only individual flowers that are botanically accurate, but entire plant communities that are accurate, which we hardly see anymore. And I think we need to train ourselves and train upcoming generations that might not necessarily see a real tall grass prairie to be able to appreciate a tall grass prairie in any medium that we can, I think.
For me as an artist, sometimes people don't understand that creating art is a form of thinking and mm-hmm. that there's a knowledge base there. And while when I want to discover something or understand it more deeply, I'll do art about it.
Yeah.
And
then,
and that topic of climate change and art is something that I've been working with for a number of years. And this time, thanks to this exhibition, I was able to focus more deeply on the prairie communities, as Evan described.
Well, we'll talk some more about that with our two guests, Helen Klebisaddle, who is a Madison artist, best known for her large-scale watercolors addressing environmental and women-centered subject matter, and Evan Eifler, a PhD student from the Botany Department at UW-Madison. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then you can join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Back after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at the effects of climate change to our plant life in this state and elsewhere. And as part of that, there is an exhibit. It's called, the exhibit is titled
Uprooted.
Uprooted. That's the word that I was trying to find. Uprooted, Plants in a Changing Climate. And the person who helped me out there was Helen Klebisaddle. She is a Madison-based artist, best known for her large-scale detailed watercolors, those beautiful watercolors. And she addresses environmental issues. She looks at women-centered subjects as well. Evan Eifler, our other guest, a PhD student in the Botany Department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They are both involved in this exhibit at the James Watrous Gallery. It's part of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. And the gallery itself is, talk about where the gallery is. It's third floor of the Overture, isn't it?
Correct. Third mm-hmm. floor of the Overture Center, a lovely gallery.
Yeah, in downtown Madison.
Right.
Off State Street.
Correct.
Yeah, so there's where you go to find it. It's a beautiful gallery, isn't it?
Yes. Stunning. Yes, and the exhibition's up through Sunday. And on Friday, they have a special Art at Noon talk going on, where the curator of this exhibition, Jody Kloss, and a wonderful poet, scholar, environmental writer, and beekeeper named Heather Swan will be presenting at noon, so kind of a free gallery talk for anybody who would like to stop on down and check it out.
And what day is that again?
The 21st on Friday.
Okay, on Friday. So you both are very interested in prairies.
Well, me particularly, yes.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Helen, you certainly are, because your art is often zeroes in on prairies.
Well, they always tell you to create, if you're going to be an artist, create art about what you know. And so I have focused in on my own community. I'm a Wisconsin farm girl that loves the Wisconsin wildlife and plant life. And I think all the artists in this show are actually sharing what they love through their art, with the idea that they'd like to engage other people in the native plant communities that are out there, with the idea that if people learn to love them, they'll work to preserve them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, at the same time, Evan, your training is in prairies, a lot of it, is it not?
A lot of my background is in prairies. So my current research for my PhD project doesn't have to do with prairies explicitly, but I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin, which would have been covered by prairies and oak savannas historically. I've worked with the prairie enthusiasts, and I've studied a lot of prairies, but my current research doesn't involve it. It's an ecosystem that I've been really passionate about for a very long time, because they're so at risk from human activities and climate change.
It was a real pleasure to get to go out tromping around the prairie with Evan and point at things and say, well, what's that really called? I only know what I grew up calling it, but what's that really called? And what's its? How does it engage with the other plants and insects that are in the community? I learned so much. It was great.
Well, and for those who may be just tuning in, this whole exhibit, you paired a sort of an expert in the field with the artist who also has expert talents.
Right. We all of the artists that are involved already had an interest in some of the plant communities, be they the prairies and oak savannas like us, or the northern forest or wetlands. But Jody Kloss, the curator, did an excellent job of pairing us with people with science backgrounds who could help us engage more deeply. Three of the scientists from the UW Arboretum worked with other of the artists, and then Evan and I had our opportunity to get together and work. He taught me that all those things that were sticking to me. What was the name of that plant?
It was a pointed leaf tick tree foil.
Turns out that'll stick to you. Now I know how it moves around. But it also, I did not know that it was a legume and I could eat it in revenge.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And I haven't given the number here yet since we broke from the news. So if you would like to join in, maybe you have a question about the exhibit, maybe have a question about, here we are talking about prairies and climate change, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And just a reminder that the show's been going on for a while, but now we're right to the end. And if you want to see that exhibit, it closes on this coming Sunday.
Correct.
So June 23rd is the last day that you'll be able to go to the James Watrous Gallery in Madison and see it. By the way, what's the reaction been? Now, this has been going on since end of April or first part of May. Have you gotten some reactions?
Well, the Wisconsin Academy and the James Watrous Gallery do a wonderful job of doing a lot of programming around this. So we had an artist panel where we got to engage with an audience at the opening, at the reception. And they also did a wonderful presentation with Lynn Keller, who is an environmental poet who deals. So we've had a chance to engage one-on-one with people. I get little Facebook messages. Oh, I love it. And also, but people that the response has been very positive as far as I'm concerned. Evan, have you talked to anybody from your program or anywhere?
And everyone has really loved it. Again, they appreciate seeing the plants that they recognize in all these paintings and imagery. It was, yeah, really beautiful. All my friends and family have seen it also. They love it. It's beautiful.
I did take a little liberty on when things actually bloom. I have a few things blooming together that probably don't. But that's the artistic license.
License there. Well, what is the state? You know, it's about claim. You know, you're trying to bring some awareness in some ways of climate change and how it's affecting our. Well, let's talk about the prairies, for example.
Yeah. So prairies, for one, we've lost, I think, a little bit more than 99% of our historical prairies in the Midwest, which is obviously it's a huge amount. And I think even more than that for oak savannas. I think we're on like a tenth of a percent left of oak savannas. And for me personally, these are some of the most beautiful ecosystems that we just don't see anymore. We can't recognize as being beautiful because they're just fragmented, these little postage stamps in between agricultural fields. But there's so few left, and perhaps prairies and oak savannas might not be quite as at risk as the other plant communities to climate change specifically. But we've lost so much just due to agriculture and human expansion. And now at this point, even if they did need to move due to climate change, like to follow the right temperature or the right conditions, there's nowhere to move to. So even if this plant's had the opportunity to adapt to climate change, I don't think they'll have that. Compared to the northern forests, those will be much more affected more specifically by climate change because they'll be moved, basically pushed right out of our state. Boreal forests really only occur in the very top little sliver of Wisconsin and then maybe a little bit of the tip of Door County. But as temperature changes, we're going to lose them completely from the state.
So that's the species that depend on them.
Yeah, and all of the plant species.
So it's kind of a cascading effect going on there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
And so Canada's going to...
Want to see a moose? Go to Canada.
Yeah, soon enough, maybe you want to see a paper birch?
Yeah, paper birch, yeah.
Paper birch is one that's in danger then.
Absolutely. Terry Horn and Marion Miner are the two Native American artists that shared their baskets, and there's at least one there that's out of paper birch. Mm-hmm. That tradition will be lost. Which is part of a deep cultural relationship with the land.
And the other plant they worked with was black ash.
Basket, yes.
Now that one we're probably going to lose due to the emerald ash borer, which is an invasive species. Maybe you talked about in the last episode, but that's also it's been terrible. It's decimating all of our ash populations across the state.
And the problem with that is that the emerald ash borer doesn't care what kind of ash it is.
No, not at all.
They go for any ash tree. So that's. Is that related to climate change too?
In some ways, sometimes there's what I've read and talked to people about is that the warming climate makes it possible for some insect species to be a little more opportunistic than they might have otherwise been able to be if it doesn't if the winter isn't as long. You know, they can their population can increase and they can really do damage to forests that may already be under quite a bit of pressure from the warming climate.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Well, that's kind of a sad thing. What are some of the other plants in your mind that are really in the greatest danger?
In Wisconsin?
Yeah, as far as prairie plants, there's a lot of orchids. Orchids have...
The fringe prairie orchid, my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Eastern white fringed prairie orchid. that one's spectacular and beautiful to see in the field, but now it occurs in so few pieces of prairie left. And those ones, just orchids in general, are at risk also from collection. That's been a big problem over the years. Yeah. And on top of that, they're just losing habitat and losing their pollinators. A lot of orchids have really, really intimate connections with specific pollinators. And so when you just have this tiny fragment of prairie stuck between two agricultural fields, it's very likely you'll lose one of these pollinators or one of these pollinator interactions, which then prevents this orchid from reproducing. And maybe they'll be able to just reproduce by themselves there for a while, but eventually that'll lead to inbreeding, which then will drive them extinct in the long run. in each one of these tiny fragments. So we really need large areas of prairie to kind of preserve any of these species, and that those we're just losing all over the state.
I will say that one of the things that I was feeling positive about was Evan introducing me to the people who have committed some of their land to prairie restoration, mm-hmm. Certainly the prairie enthusiasts. But there were one of the prairies that we looked at was that, right, where mm-hmm. they took a piece of their land and are just allowing it to and actually working with it to make sure that it preserves some of these species.
Yeah. I'd like to mention two of the sites that we visited, which are spectacular and relatively close to Madison, within about a half an hour, maybe 40-minute drive. One of them is Black Earth Rettenbend Prairie, which is just outside of Black Earth. It's a tiny, tiny fragment of prairie between two agricultural fields. But it's one of the highest quality dry prairies we have left in the state. And actually, that'll be looking really spectacular in the coming weeks. They have a big population of wood lily, which looks like any other ornamental lily you'd plant in your garden, but is spectacular and beautiful and native, which that's another one we're losing all over the state. Deer also love to eat it, and with orchids too. Deer, another issue we're running into. The other site is...
by the way, before you go to the other site, you said a fragment. Is it like 10 acres?
Probably less than 10 acres. I would say maybe 5-6 acres, maybe.
So really small.
Yeah, it's very small. So it's an easy walk to see the whole thing.
And the second one?
The second one is also very close to there, is Pleasant Valley Conservancy. So that's also managed by the prairie enthusiasts, although it's owned privately. But it's spectacular, both prairies and one of the best examples left of oak savanna that I've seen in the state, with these just huge open grown white and bur oaks on these dry bluffs with an intact understory. That's what we're really losing in a lot of these oak savannas. Either we're losing fire, so then other invasive species and other shrubs will grow up and kind of overtop and overcompete the other understory species, the different prairie species, the special orchids, lilies, the small things that people really like to see. Yeah, it's just a spectacular sight that everyone should go see.
And that sounds larger.
Yeah, that one's significantly larger. I don't know how big, but large. Enough to walk around for an afternoon.
Yeah, okay. So that's good. You know, Veronica, you sent an email in wondering how climate change will affect those of us who garden.
Well, I'll just say one thing. Evan mentioned how the name of the lily again?
Wood lily.
Wood lily is decorative. I think one of the way I'd like to see how climate changes our gardening practices is that we engage in planting more native species in mm-hmm. our gardens, because they're every bit as beautiful as the kind of perennials we're used to doing. And that's what I'm doing in my home garden now, is trying to transfer over to more native plants, because mm-hmm. yeah. that gives our insects a better chance.
A leg up.
Yeah,
a
leg
up.
Those plants are perfectly adapted to grow just where you're planting them too. So you need much less, you don't need fertilizers, usually you wouldn't need pesticides or anything like that. You don't need to water them as much. They're a really great option. I think people usually think of native plant species as being maybe like messy or weedy or not very nice looking, but you can find beautiful clump forming plants that you can easily incorporate into a garden. People, should do that more. I think that would really help.
Randy and Ryo wondered if there are some good things for some plants due to climate change.
Well, there's good things for some plants, not necessarily native plants. I mean, the whole idea of some of the native species that are able to move in, they certainly get a boost sometimes. And I'll just mention that one of our artists actually found out that the plants she really enjoyed painting were invasive species. That was Lynn Railsbeck, and she found out a little more about it. Now she's intentionally using these images to help educate people to know which ones they are and which ones we might want to eat or get rid of in terms of beautiful, thanks to her science advisor.
Yeah, in general, I think for our native plant species, there's not much good has come of this. There's maybe an obscure example that I can't come up with, but in general, it's helping these species that are more invasive, that are not from this area. Maybe they're from an area that has a climate that our climate is changing to, and that might help them. But I can't think of an example offhand of a native species that's really benefited. It's possible. I can't think of one off my head.
What's the you said you were doing some other research that is now different from the prairie research you're doing, and does it relate to climate change?
Actually, yes. So I study a habitat type or a plant community in South Africa known as the Rhenosterveld or rhino field. And that I think I bonded with because of my background in prairies and oak savannas. It's another one that grew on relatively fertile soils in South Africa. So it was plowed for agriculture. And now there's, I think, less than 3% of that habitat left in that area. And so we're just trying to do inventories of the different species that occur there. And I'm studying one group of species specifically that's really endangered. A lot of them only occur on one site left on Earth, one of these tiny fragments in between agricultural fields. So we're trying to study them, and they're really fascinating evolutionary history before they go extinct, basically, and trying to preserve them along the way. But that's also a difficult
task. Are there ways that we can preserve? I mean, we're losing. How do we preserve and try and you know, save some of these plants, you know, seed saving?
Seed savers. They do that with garden plants, with some of the traditional heritage plants. I would say that informing ourselves and really becoming acquainted with the plants. One of the things that I think is kind of a positive here, one of the species interactions where the insects and the plants are so closely bound is around the Karner butterfly and the lupine. And just knowing that you need to preserve some of these in order to, if you want to see the pretty blue butterfly, then you better make sure there's some spaces where the lupine are allowed to grow undisturbed. And so certainly there's lots of examples of where citizen science has done positive things, like with bluebirds. But that came because people cared enough about that particular species to educate themselves around it and start to understand what they could do to make a difference. And I think that's kind of the goal of this whole exhibition, is to get accurate information out there and to encourage people to renew their love of nature and do something about it.
Yeah,
figure out what you love and do something about it.
That makes a lot of sense. Don had one question and emailed about the just looking down the road, 5-10 years, I mean, are there some that you're worried about that are going to be gone in a short period of time? Or what is it?
Some of those orchids.
Yeah, I'd say orchids in general. There's even one that I just went to Door County to look for that occurs kind of in the more boreal forest. It's called Calypso bulbosa. It's this absolutely minuscule, tiny little orchid, but it's really beautiful. It's stunning. But that one we're losing all over the state. And I searched, I think, 4 different cedar swamps in Door County and didn't find it anywhere. And that historically would have been the most number of populations would have been in Door County. And I don't think there's any left at this point.
Well, that's why it would be wonderful if people could figure out what they looked like so that they could let us know if they find them.
So I think ultimately, especially with this exhibition, I think it's important to teach people what a prairie is so they can recognize it and appreciate it instead of confusing it with a weedy field, so that maybe instead of plowing it, instead of trying to plant something else that looks prettier, something that's from China or something, an ornamental plant, instead let them appreciate a prairie for what it is and all the ecosystem services that it gives us.
Let's go back to the exhibit and maybe just review again what people can see at this week. For the rest of this week.
Sure. Well, there are 7 artists. 2 are Native American basket makers, and 5 are painters working in oils and watercolor. All of the painters are focusing on particular plant communities. There's several paintings of the forest. There's one artist who is doing wonderful plein air painting where she just goes out and sits in the forest and paints the moccasin flower, the pink lady slipper. I have a couple paintings that are actually of prairie root systems because native roots run so deep. And almost all of them show a little bit of an interaction between the plants and often insect species. One of our artists has beautiful paintings of monarch butterflies around a milkweed plant. And you'll see things that, they're beautiful. You'll see a lot of beauty and a lot of meaning. There's great signage as well that explains some of the things you're looking at.
Yeah, and that's all at the James Watrous Gallery. And the gallery is located on the 3rd floor of the Overture Center in Madison, and certainly something wonderful to see. And while you're there, sort of contemplating a little bit about potential changes and maybe what we can all do in our own small way to save plants, save prairies maybe, and fight back on climate change. I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah,
it was my pleasure.
It was a lot of fun to talk with you. And our guest, Helen Klebisaddle, Madison-based artist, and we have one of her paintings up on our program notes, so just go to wpr.org/Larry and you can get a little taste of what you're going to see at this exhibit. Helen Klebisaddle, our guest, as was Evan Eifler, a PhD student in the botany department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, both involved in this wonderful exhibit. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope that you'll join us again tomorrow. Jim Ward will be back to talk about summer care of your automobile and, of course, take your questions as well. That's at 11 tomorrow. In the meantime, you know what? There's lots more in store here this afternoon, so you stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.